Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Welcome, everybody, to the Damage Report on another Monday, a fantastic Monday with me, Francesca Fiorentini, in for John Iadarola, still out being an awesome dad, of course, and slogging through as we will slog through this Monday of news. Woo, we got a lot to cover. Some good news, some exciting news on the strike fronts, some corruption charges. Some just like low key white nationalists or high key ones, in Congress, as always. And with me on this Monday, Senator Nina Turner. Senator, how are you doing?
Good. So good to be here with you, Francesca.
So good to have you. You look awesome in yellow if you're listening as a podcast. Nina's in yellow and crushing it already. Are you excited to get into all of, there's some good stuff. I feel like we've got good things on the rundown.
Yeah, we got a good mix this time. Sometimes it gets a little bleak for us, but today
it does.
Yeah, we got a little bit for everybody, I think.
Oh no, it's bleak. It'll definitely get, don't worry, everybody who thinks it's gonna be like, you know, an uplifting news day. No. It's still bleak, but some, you know, rays of hope out there. So, but yeah. First, let's dig into this very bleak stain. But actually, before we do that, you guys know what to do right now. You're liking the stream. You're sharing the stream right now. You're sending in your super chats and your comments. I will read them throughout. Twitch, what's up? Send me your Twitch comments. Obviously, members and all the things. All the things, all the buttons. Click them all, except for the ads. Don't do that yet or ever. I don't know, unless you drink mud. Why is that a thing? Okay, let's get into the news. For the second time in his career, Senator Bob Menendez is facing corruption charges, bribery charges. The first ones were in 2017. He skipped those. He evaded those. And I guess that's why he tried it again. New Jersey senator is being charged with accepting bribes in exchange for favors. Remember, this is the former head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He accepted those favors on behalf of the Egyptian government, which is a real head scratcher. But it wasn't him, just him. He was accompanied by his wife, Nadine, and three New Jersey businessmen who are also indicted along with him. Both the Menendezes face up to 45 years if convicted. 45 years in jail, of course. Menendez has spoken out. He says he refuses to resign his chair as senator. We'll talk about who's asking for that. He has resigned from the chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, but that's not the chair we're looking for. At this point, buddy, it's probably time to go. But let's look into the specifics. The indictment, again, the second in 8 years against the 69-year-old senator, alleges an illegal commingling of Menendez's obligations to advance U.S. priorities and his private interest in cultivating relationships with wealthy businessmen. It also includes charges against his wife and three New Jersey businessmen who authorities say showered the couple with money, gold, and a luxury car in exchange for official favors. Some of the things that were found in his home, yes, they were recovered. That's important because we'll talk about some reactions later. $100,000 in gold bars. We're keeping gold bars, guys. So all the gold heads out there are like, yes, we got one in the Senate. $480,000 in cash, including being hidden in a safe, in closets, in jackets, according to the reports. Also, DNA of one of the men prosecutors say bribed him in an envelope containing hundreds of thousands of dollars. Basically, they were running out of places to store all the cash that they were getting illegally. One set of allegations is that Menendez directly interfered in criminal investigations, including pushing to install a federal prosecutor in New Jersey he believed could be influenced in a criminal case against a businessman and associate of the senator. Other accusations include repeated actions by Menendez to benefit Egypt, despite U.S. government misgivings over the country's human rights record, that in recent years have prompted Congress to attach restrictions on aid. His efforts include ghostwriting a letter to fellow senators, encouraging them to lift a hold on $300 million in aid to Egypt. Again, remember, Egypt has a military regime, has had one, and honestly, the U.S. has never cut ties to Egypt. We're not talking about withholding completely the money. We're talking about certain stipulations on the money. These aren't sanctions, right? In the ways that we've seen levied at Iran or at Venezuela. No. It doesn't matter that Egypt has been killing its own people. There's still a relationship there. But anyway, back to Menendez. He had a very fun defense. And I just call it fun because it's sort of ridiculous. One of the things that he said is that the reason he stored so much cash on hand in his home is because his family fled Cuba, and so they are used to making sure they have money on them and being ready to go at any moment's notice. No matter that was years and years and decades ago, but it's also what criminals do when you can't put stuff in banks because you got it through illicit, means. But anyway, here's what he had to say in his defense. Again, he's not resigning. For years, he said, forces behind the scenes have repeatedly attempted to silence my voice and dig my political grave. Since this investigation was leaked nearly a year ago, there's been an active smear campaign of anonymous sources and innuendos to create an air of impropriety where none exists. Those behind this campaign simply cannot accept that a first generation Latino American from humble beginnings could rise to be a US senator and serve with honor and distinction. Even worse, they see me as an obstacle in the way of their broader goals. Who are you talking about? Is this enemy in the room with you right now, Bob Menendez? It seems like the only enemy in the room with you is your wife and yourself and the mirror. But Senator Turner making this into a, you're trying to take down a powerful Latino. I mean, talk about bad faith.
Francesca, this is definitely the wrong way to use identity politics. I mean, this is an example of the wrong way, the bad way to use identity, but he is doing it. You know, I was thinking about when you were, educating our viewers or bringing them up to date about this, about the wife being involved. And I'm thinking, wow, this is not what was meant by it takes teamwork to make the dream work. They got that all wrong, Francesca.
It depends on your dream, I guess. But right, yeah, but I mean,
all maybe up in this together. And I know we're going to get into who's asking him to resign. Should have been happened. I mean, he got away with it the first time, as you laid out. I don't think he's going to get away with this time. But, a court will decide ultimately what happens to the senator. But, something that David Sirota put on Twitter really caught my attention, Francesca. And I want to share this with our viewers. He said, imagine being mad at Bob Menendez while insisting Donald Trump will drain the swamp. Conversely, he said, imagine hating Donald Trump's corruption while defending Bob Menendez. Both examples are deranged, yet that's like 90% of America that's been lobotomized by Fox and MSNBC, respectively. Mm. And I'm telling you, Sirota hit the nail on the head on that, because we know that each side, each camp has taken a side and they make excuses for whoever's on their team. There is no excuse for what has been found out about Senator Bob Menendez at this point. And it is nothing but sheer arrogance and hubris why this man has not totally resigned from the United States Senate, because it is legal to bribe politicians in America. I just want to remind our viewers of that.
Absolutely. And yet he had to seek illegal means. I mean, do you understand? Like, the government of Egypt could lobby like the right way, so to speak, right? I mean, you can even, as we know, and we'll talk about Clarence Thomas later on in the rundown, right? As long as you disclose some of the gifts that are being given to you, or if it is, banked under, a lobbying or campaign, like there are ways to get around all of this, right? There's ways for the Egyptian government to actually have a massive influence on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And yet, no, it wasn't enough for them. They had to go out around everything. everybody and get all this, you know, money in cash and gold bars in cars and all of these things. Again, as we've talked about, bribery is pretty much legalized throughout our system. So going around this, the American system is just, it means you're wildly corrupt. And we're going to hold him accountable because obviously we're progressives and we're trying to apply equally our standards to Donald Trump as did Bob Menendez. Here's what I'll say about Senator Bob Menendez. Leave aside the corruption charges. This guy has been a toxic force when it comes to the region that he claims to hail from, right? His parents were refugees from Cuba. He claims he's Latino. He lifts that up all the time. And yet what does he do time and time again? He continually demonizes countries in Latin America if their politics do not go his way, if their politics he thinks don't benefit US corporate interests, right? I.e. Venezuela, i.e. Cuba. And he consistently stands in the way of any kind of progress when it comes to easing US relations with Latin America. And in contrast, you have people like AOC, who are leading this charge. All these new representatives, young Latinos, Joaquin Castro, leading the charge to try and chart a new way in the region. But you've got right-wing Latinos like Marco Rubio, like Bob Menendez, Republican, doesn't matter what party they're on, and Ted Cruz, who are all saying, no, 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 now you're socialist, now you're evil, now you eat babies and or dogs and or we forgot what the line is anymore. So all I have to say is the dude has been terrible on foreign policy. And lo and behold, he's been taking bribes from Egypt. Oh, I'm sorry. I guess Maduro didn't bribe him hard enough to, you know, swing his way in Venezuela. Senator Bob Menendez has been indicted on corruption and bribery charges, and he is again refusing to step down as senator. But people are calling for it. It's just interesting on who is calling for him to step down and resign and who is not and who's soft pedaling it. And as you can imagine, it largely falls around partisan lines, but not completely. So let's just rip the Band-Aid off and go to our boy Donald J. Trump. Of course, he's calling for Senate Democrats. Wait, no. Senate Democrats should all resign. Oh, let's have them all resign en masse based on Senator Bob Menendez. They all knew what was going on and the way he lived. Why doesn't the FBI raid Senate Democrats' homes like they illegally raided Mar-a-Lago? Except they raided his home, you ding dong, as John would say. How do you think they found the gold bars? God. Nothing was wrong. Okay. Can you imagine how much crooked Joe Biden has stolen and what's in some of his many homes? Well, we know because he opened his homes. Joe Biden was like, do you want to check the garage? I think there might be something in the garage. Oh God. Oh God. And then people, they found like documents that he had taken, right? They weren't classified, but he had taken them. He shouldn't have, but anyway, they didn't give me any warning. Homie. They notoriously gave you warning. They notoriously gave you months of warning before they raided Mar-a-Lago. Remember how you moved all the boxes from like the downstairs bathroom to the upstairs one to the tennis court to like where Ivanka's buried? Anyway, crooked coffers must be loaded up with cash. I wonder how much they got paid for rigging the election. Menendez is one of the many, a small timer at that. Every Democrat should resign from the Senate. Our borders are broken. Our elections are rigged. MAGA. Wait, Senator, a small timer at that. Don't you? I love that little like dig. It's like, wait, hang on. Is this a criminal calling another criminal small time?
Come on, Francesca, we gotta give it to him. He is the master of petty, baby. He always gonna put a little extra on that.
Small timer.
Small timer. He's small timer. Gold bars all up in the crib, but he is. And I mean, I know we just sometimes you gotta laugh to keep from crying and you just yelling and just going crazy about this because sometimes a broke clock twice a day, my grandmother used to say, and yeah. Trump is really on to something. I wouldn't say every senator needs to resign, but it is very clear that the campaign finance system in this country is broken. And that when we say it is legal to bribe politicians, everybody just not all out in the open like Menendez and keeping gold bars. But when we talk about, you know, buying, purchasing stocks and that kind of thing that these Congress people can do regardless mm-hmm. of chamber that they're in, how their family can be involved. I mean, you got the people who write the rules can also benefit from the rules too. And that is another reason why this dude has no fear of contradiction, no fear about anything that he's done, because he's been able to get away with it all this time. Yeah. So Trump is on to something a little bit, but it's kind of like the pot calling the kettle black. But we know Trump will, he'll roll that all day, every day. Doesn't matter to him, because he had definitely has no shame. I think, you know what, Francesca, him, and now that I think about it, him and Senator Menendez have a lot in common.
They do. They absolutely do. I mean, they, again, Bob Menendez is probably one of the most like centrist of all corporate centrists, to the point where he's basically a Republican. He clearly has been in power for too long. We need term limits. And yeah, so Trump, if anything, he's jealous. That's why he calls him small time. What's funny though, and everyone needs to remember that back when Trump assumed office, there was a comic who called the White House and got through to the president, then Donald Trump, pretending to be Bob Menendez. And Trump notoriously said this. He said, "How are you? Congratulations on everything. We're really proud of you. Congratulations, great job. You went through a tough, tough situation, and I don't think a fair situation." So that is Donald Trump. 2018 Donald Trump congratulating then Senator Bob Menendez, who was, by the way, the first corruption charges ended in a hung jury. So didn't go anywhere. So he evaded it. Those, by the way, were for having sold thousands of dollars sold influence in exchange for thousands of dollars in contributions and vacations in Europe and the Caribbean. Again, ended with a hung jury and declared a mistrial. So again, it's just like, let's keep it going, buddy.
They have a lot in common. I mean, there's
so much in common. He's jealous. Trump. He could have been doing that, but he decided he wanted to be president and like do a bunch of illegal stuff while he was president. Here's another Republican though, who is saying, I don't really know what he's saying, but something about how actually Democrats are doing this on purpose so that we can all be distracted from the Hunter Biden and the Biden crime family saga. Take a look.
First of all, let me say, I don't trust anything coming out of the DOJ. And I would not put it beyond them to go after Menendez as a sacrifice to whereby they could pretend that they would willingly and effectively investigate things like this. It'd give them a little cover for obviously not participating and helping the Oversight Committee, upon which I sit in the House, to investigate the Biden crime family.
Okay, again, if you look, I don't know if you understood any of that. I feel like you need, if you are like four shots into your day, like obviously Representative Clay Higgins is there, then maybe you get what he's saying. But he's effectively saying, I don't trust the charges, but to me, because Republicans always have to have an angle. It's not enough to just be like, yeah, he's corrupt, resign. It's just, no, it's about the Biden crime family. Like, oh my God, dude, it's a layup. Just Take the shot. It's right there. Don't distract. Anyway, interestingly though, not every Republican is calling on Menendez to resign. Not every Republican is making this about the Biden crime family. There's one Republican actually who's standing up for a Democrat, Bob Menendez. Who is that Republican?
Do you think Senator Menendez should resign, given his
opinion? I don't have an opinion on that.
Why not?
Because I think due process is important, and I think he has the right to defend himself. He's innocent until proven guilty. The media has to stop acting like everybody is guilty before they're even judged by a jury. So, no, I think everybody is innocent until proven guilty.
That is George Santos. Due process, baby. I love it. I love when the worst guy you know comes out to defend you. Do you think that that's not even lost on Menendez? He's just like, yeah, that's right. New Jersey, recognize New Jersey. But anyway, Senator Turner, it's interesting though. It's interesting we're not hearing more Republicans talk about this, or if they are, they're completely ignoring, again, their chosen leader who has however many 4+ indictments coming at him. Interestingly, not for this Not for this unscrupulous amount of bribery. Yes, there's the Ukraine phone call. Yes, there was the impeachment, you know, dig up dirt on Joe Biden. But like gold, money, not yet in terms of Trump. We haven't quite seen that from like a foreign country. Although maybe one did help him get elected in 2016.
Well, I mean, you know, you hear from Trump. I mean, he's a billionaire, so he didn't need their money.
Sure.
Obviously. I mean, he didn't take a paycheck as president. He don't need it. He's the ultimate businessman, the art of the deal. So he didn't need money. I will say probably most Republicans are not jumping into the fray because of what you just laid out about Trump. You know, just leave it alone. Don't touch it. And also right. More Democrats. I mean, I'm certainly old enough to remember a time where Democrats went crazy on Al Franken. I'm sure you kind of sort of remember that as yep. well. We had Schumer at the time. Al Franken must go. And now you got Dick Durbin, who's the majority, is the leader, just kind of muted a little bit on yeah. what is happening with Bob Menendez. So compare the two, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, look, let's jump to it. Let's talk about the Democrats. How are they responding to this news about Bob Menendez? Well, there is only one senator who is asking on Menendez to resign, and that is John Fetterman. That's right. The only one who's openly saying that. In the House, you got a few more people, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Here's what the representative had to say.
I think the situation is quite unfortunate, but I do believe that it is in the best interests for Senator Menendez to resign in this moment. As you mentioned, consistency matters. It shouldn't matter whether it's a Republican or a Democrat. The details in this indictment are extremely serious.
Yes, they are. And yet that leadership is not coming from the Senate itself. So we got Chris Murphy, Mark Kelly. Let's go to Chris Murphy saying no senator should be trading on their position in order to enrich themselves. It's hard for me to believe that Senator Menendez can be effective in his job given these allegations. But I think I want to get back and talk to my colleagues on the Foreign Relations Committee before I recommend a path forward for Senator Menendez. Mark Kelly saying, I've never seen anything like this, noting that Menendez has stepped down as foreign relations chair. That's a serious step, Kelly said. But I think Senator Menendez is going to have to think long and hard about the cloud that's going to hang over his service in the United States Senate. He's got to figure out whether he can adequately serve the people of New Jersey. So a sort of search your soul type angle there. And then perhaps the most soft on Senator Menendez is from, sadly, Dick Durbin, who said, this is a very serious charge. There's no question about it, but there's the but. It bears reminding us of what I've said about the indictments against who? Donald Trump. Equally serious charges. These are, in fact, indictments have yet to be proven. Under the rule of law, a person who is accused is entitled to the presumption of innocence, and it's a responsibility of the government to prove that case. I say that about Donald Trump. I'll say the same thing about Bob Menendez. I mean, look, he's being fair, I guess, but it's such a whataboutism that it's painful, right? This is a senator. You've worked with this senator for years and years and years, and that's probably why you're running cover for him. But like, aren't you worried that this is a terrible look for you to not call for his resignation? Cut the ties, bro. I don't know, but they protect their own. Senator Turner, what do you make of this?
They're conflating the issues. There's a difference between the court of law. We get it. Yeah, definitely. Innocent until proven guilty. It is up to the feds to prove the case.
Right.
You know, so that happens in court. But the way that this man has comported himself, and you're right, what Representative Ocasio-Cortez had to say about the weight of the evidence makes it clear that Senator Bob Menendez, who dodged it the first time. See, this ain't the first time, right. You know, now he's in it, got his hands in the cookie jar again, and it's being revealed to the world. He, for the sake of his residents, of the constituents, but this is again, I think we're asking him for more than what he is willing to do, which is to not be a selfish ass person yeah. right now. When it comes to his constituents, he's doing what he has done. He's being true to form, which is he is putting himself first. Because if he were not putting himself first, he would step down. Let's go ahead and duke this out in the court of law. And then you can go ahead and deal with your Senate seat on the back end.
Right.
If that's the case. But for now, given the weight of these charges, there is no way on God's green earth that this man, without a serious spotlight always on him, can serve, the key word, serve his constituents who deserve so much better. Two different things. Stop conflating a court of law with the court of the streets. In this case.
Exactly. That is a great point. And no one's saying send him to jail immediately. Yeah, no. We're saying, shouldn't he resign at this point? And the other thing that's interesting, which might be why both Democrats and Republicans are kind of tempered on this issue, is that the governor of New Jersey is asking Menendez to resign. He himself is saying resign. And the governor, Phil Murphy, is a Democrat. And right. If Bob Menendez resigns, Phil Murphy would be appointing a senator to the House, to the Senate, to DC. And so you can only imagine that Phil Murphy is going to appoint another Democrat. So it's not about losing a seat. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not about, oh, we're losing a vote, as if let's put Sinema and Manchin over here. But like, it's not even a politics game. It's a purely, I'm protecting my own game, which is
the person
even
in my club. They're in the club together, Francesca.
Exactly.
This is all this is. So just call it what it is and stop playing games with the American people. You looking right out for this dude, because far too many of them got their hands in the cookie jar and they praying to God or whoever, whatever they pray to, that they don't too get caught. That's what this is.
Guys, it looks like striking works. That's right. Solidarity works and strikes work. And we finally might be able to see the final chapter in Stranger Things, because after 5 months of being on strike, the WGA last night has reached a tentative deal with the AMPTP. Again, the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, that has all the major studios and major streaming services. Here's what they put up late last night. Writers Guild of America West tweeted, the WGA and AMPTP have reached a tentative agreement. This was made possible by the enduring solidarity of WGA members and extraordinary support of our union siblings who stood with us for over 146 days. More details to come after contract language is finalized. They said a lot more, but those sister unions obviously are SAG-AFTRA of the actors, and then IATSE of all the tech workers and people behind the scenes, and cinematographers and things like this. So that's really important. But here's more, because it's not just that there's a deal reached. It seems like, from what we're seeing, it's a good deal. So this is from that letter that WGA sent out to its members. They said, we can say with great pride that this deal is exceptional, with meaningful gains and protections for writers in every sector of the membership, the WGA negotiating committee said in a Sunday night message to its members. The proposed 3-year contract would still have to be ratified by the union's 11,500 members, would boost pay rates and residual payments for streaming shows, and impose new rules surrounding the use of artificial intelligence. So I think it's really important to know that just a little bit ago, it didn't look like these guys were going to get together. That as recently as the end of August, the AMPTP was completely not serious when it comes to the WGA's demands. The WGA met with them, that they felt like they were not treated seriously, that there were half measures offered to them. Then the AMPTP leaked its offer to the media before it was even discussed, in order to try and like gin up support. It backfired. So they did this to themselves, and that's why the AMPTP has had to negotiate like this. That's why the WGA has been able to hold out, which is because there is so much solidarity, there was so much strength, and because the AMPTP was being absolutely ridiculous, and we all could see that. But Senator Turner, I have to be honest, I didn't think this would come so quickly, and I am very heartened and excited to see that it has.
As am I, and I'm sure the Writers Guild members are as well. Because let us not forget, when workers go out on strike, they lose their pay. And their union can usually cover their COBRA benefits, but it depends on how much a union has in a strike fund, how long they can really hold out. So this is no walk in the park. It is serious when workers say we going out to strike.
very happy for them, hoping that for the actors and actresses, you know, that guild, that they, that things come around for them. But I found very two things. One is their protections against AI, mm-hmm. vitally important, and that this is a win for all sectors. Mm-hmm. Members in all sectors. I mean, this is really ringing true that this is a summer of solidarity as we see other members in the House of Labor fighting, for example, the UAW against tiers. Also, the way the Teamsters did with UPS to ensure that all the workers, all of their members receive a living wage, good pay, and are able to really cement a good life for themselves yeah. and enjoy the fruits of their labor. So, Francesca, this is good, good, good news. Now, solidarity, summer solidarity, baby, is rolling on though.
It is. It absolutely is. It's going to be a fall solidarity, a winter solidarity, and all that. We'll get into the UAW in a second. But it's really important that, yeah, like you're saying, this is about tiers, right? Streaming versus not streaming, right? Television. Trying to separate that out as if we all know it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Come on, stop it. And we know that these companies are making hand over fist money. They claim poverty. They're saying, oh, no, but our subscriptions are down, but they won't release the information. And we believe that actually releasing some of the data about streaming numbers and pegging writers' pay to the success of these shows will be in the deal. So again, we don't have the deal in front of us, but it is a huge, there's an indication that this is actually really, really important. I'm a little bit like concerned that it's only 3 years because we know they'll be on their FS. I can't say either of those words. In 3 years, they're going to do the same thing again because, you know, corporate executives are going to corporate executive. But just a little bit more, obviously, we know that with the tentative pact of the WGA done, entertainment company leaders are expected to turn their attention now to the 160,000 member performers union, SAG-AFTRA, to accelerate those talks in an effort to get the industry back to work. Again, those actors have been on strike since mid-July. But this is 160,000, it's a lot of actors, a lot more than there are writers. But as Senator Turner said, this is so important for everyone else who works in this industry, because what was happening was that a lot of people were being pitted against one another. We're talking about, you know, oh, what about the producers or the editors or these folks? And folks who honestly, arguably have less sway and pull, as if writers had any to begin with. But when we do right by the writers, then everyone else has more of a leg to stand on, including those IATSE workers who stood in solidarity with the writers. And then including SAG, when the actors decided to go on strike, that was pivotal. Lastly, I just want to give a little bit of like backdrop to this. It seems like maybe the studios were like, all right, we could cough up this money because Graphic 7 Studios had their own motivations to get an agreement done by early October. They need to ramp up production soon to salvage the network TV season and their 2024 film slates. I mean, we're talking about, you know, Dune 2 was put on hold. You saw unscripted shows like Drew Barrymore's show or Bill Maher's show. Those shows also did not come back out of solidarity, being shamed for being scabs. But this is not the way it was in 2007 when a lot of unscripted started up and basically was undercutting the scripted writers. Because even unscripted is scripted, guys. Even all the things that you see on television, there, yes, if it's a game show, there's still somebody writing all the content that's being read by those hosts. So this is huge and very exciting for writers. So hats off and kudos to everyone who was involved and everyone who came out to the picket line. And there is not work resuming yet, but should be shortly if this contract is ratified.
Parts distribution centers, they generate billions of dollars in revenue and profits for the companies, profit margins of 30 to 40% on bare parts that customers need. These workers at GM and Stellantis get paid less than their counterparts in the assembly plants. They're on a lower wage tier.
on a lower wage tier. Those are important words in this time of striking unions, as every sector is affected by different tiers getting different amounts of money for basically the same work. And so the UAW and the auto workers are no different. So these are strikes happening, expanded strikes from the UAW strike, in 38 parts distribution centers operated by, again, the big three, General Motors, Jeep and Ram owner, and then Stellantis in 20 states. Ford, however, has been spared. We'll talk about why, but here is a map of where UAW strikes are happening and have expanded. So very concentrated in Michigan and Ohio with 17 locations, but you've got everything from Oregon to Denver to Dallas to Orlando to Mississippi, and then sort of dotted in those, what are those easternly states? I can't make them out. It's all the same. It's all one big New York, Connecticut. I don't know, but yeah, I'm kidding. But it is. It's nationwide, people. Ford, however, has been spared because, as President Sean Fain said, we've made some real progress at Ford. We still have serious issues to work through, but we do want to recognize that Ford is showing that they are serious about reaching a deal. At GM and Stellantis, it's a different story. They say that they're going to need some serious pushing. And remember, they're asking for a 40% pay increase. They're asking for an eliminating all of those tiers, right? So it shouldn't be any different if you are working at a parts distribution center than if you're working at an assembly plant. It is part of the same job and you are part of the same union. But Senator Turner, it is pretty incredible how much the UAW has been able to flex, right? And you already see Ford coming to the table, but what do you make of this, of the way this strike is working and the way it's rolling out?
It is a thing of beauty. I mean, President Sean Fain, he my spirit animal. I just want him to know that, baby. Rocking and rolling, letting it be known. We gonna flex. You know, I went to Streetsboro in Ohio. It is a parts distribution center, standing side by side with those workers. I had an opportunity to talk to them. It's about 112 people at that particular plant in Ohio, but they deliver all over the country. Mm-hmm. And to see them walk out in solidarity in that way. And I got to give a shout out to local 573 in my home state of Ohio and to their local president, Mike Cowman. They doing the thing, Francesca, but they are there. They're going to be there 24-hour shifts, standing up and fighting for as long as they have to. And we all know what they're fighting for: better wages, better work conditions, and better benefits. They absolutely deserve it. And the strategy that the national president is using, Sean Fain, baby, is nothing short of brilliant.
Yeah, my favorite is that he's giving them like these deadlines. He's like, by Friday at noon, if you do not come to the table, we will be striking more facilities. And they are able to keep which facilities they're striking kind of under wraps.
Inspect what you expect. And because I think, Francesca, he has about 145,000 members, they do have a strike fund. But once you have to bring that strike fund for all the members, you know, it puts a weight on it. So he's being strategically and tactically masterful in fighting for his members.
Right. I mean, and it has had an economic impact. Let's just jump to graphic six. The Anderson Economic Group, a consulting firm in Michigan that tracks the industry, estimated Friday that the strike has caused about $1.6 billion in economic damage, including more than $500 million for the companies and more than $100 million in wages lost to strikers and layoffs. So $500 million, though. It's a drop in the bucket. This is the big three. You think they care? I mean, $100 million in lost wages is huge. And as yes mentioned, there is a strike fund. But of course, both sides are playing this very cautiously. And that's why you see someone like Sean Fain and the idea that union leaders are just like crazed and power hungry and do whatever. No, no, this is very strategic. It is not willy nilly. It's not messy. It is trying to take into consideration that yes, there are lost wages and no, the strike fund doesn't have necessarily what it takes to pay out every one of those 40,000 plus workers at the same time. So
they're only getting $500 a week, Francesca.
Yeah.
And the union, the strike fund is also being used to keep up their health benefits through COBRA, which we know is very expensive.
Oh,
if only we had universal health care in the United States of America. And I don't, the way that that was worded, no, these CEOs of these companies are causing the damage. Make no mistake, the workers are asking for what they deserve. In 2008, the taxpayers bailed out the auto industry, and those workers sacrificed for that. So they are not asking for too much. They are not reaching too high. They are asking for exactly what they deserve. And not only are they asking, they're making a demand and they're willing to fight for it. So the CEOs of these companies, we're going to put Ford in a, put an asterisk by Ford. They need to come on and stop wrecking the economy and do the right thing.
Absolutely. Can we just jump to this one last piece and then go to break?
You're in the captain's seat.
I'm in the captain's seat.
I'm
the captain now. So for the first time, actually, in 100 years, as labor experts are saying, a sitting president will be visiting the picket lines of a striking labor union. And that union is the United Auto Workers, UAW. And President Biden is that president. He's going to travel to Michigan on Tuesday. He tweeted, "Tuesday, I'll go to Michigan to join the picket line and stand in solidarity with the men and women of UAW as they fight for a fair share of the value they help create. It's time for a win-win agreement that keeps American auto manufacturing thriving with well-paid UAW jobs." Again, the UAW has not endorsed President Biden for re-election. They are holding that out. They don't see the connection, really. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was asked about that on Meet the Press, and here's what she had to say.
UAW's president, when he was with us last week, said, when I asked him why the union hadn't yet endorsed President Biden, he said that has to be earned. That sounds like he's disappointed that party leadership is not doing as much as they could. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think it always has to be earned. And President Biden showing up to the picket line on Tuesday is a historic, historic event. We have never seen in modern history a president show up to a picket line like this. And I think it should be earned. It needs to be earned. And I believe that President Biden is working towards that, especially when he lands in Michigan on Tuesday to earn that.
Senator, your thoughts?
You know, I'm fidgeting in my seat, Francesca. Listen, going to the picket line is a start, but it's a far cry from earning. You know, this is the same president that used his muscle along with Congress to stop rail workers. See, all of this, none of this stuff is happening in the vacuum. The UAW is benefiting from the outcry and the rage that people had over what happened to the rail workers. I will give President Biden some credit, but this ain't monumental in that he's just going to show up to the picket line. Because you know why he's showing up to that picket line? Because the UAW put it on him. Had they endorsed, he wouldn't be. But Sean Fain and his members say, we not just rolling over for politicians anymore. You got to show us whose side you're on. Now, what the president can further do is get that PRO Act passed. See, symbols matter. Okay, so I don't want anybody to say Sister Senator Turner. No, I ain't going to disregard it. But let me put an and on there. Let me put a however on there. Let me put an asterisk on there. That don't get all giddy and jumping and doing cartwheels just because he's showing up. That's only phase one of more things that this president can do to show that he is on the side through his policy positions for working class people in this country. It is a start.
Absolutely.
I'll give him just a little.
No, and I think you're right to lay this victory of at least getting this a president out there to the picket line at the feet of Sean Fain, president of the UAW. However, a former president thinks, it was me. Donald Trump, of course, has said that he thinks it was his idea. But of course, he's going to take credit for that because Trump is himself going to be visiting the UAW. So we'll see which president and former presidents visit and show of solidarity will matter more. There is new reporting from The Intercept that the Congressional Black Caucus has been targeted by the AIPAC lobby. That is, again, the Israeli lobby. And the CBC, the Congressional Black Caucus, hasn't actually done very much to stick up for its own members, as this reporting finds. So the CBC has been silent on the AIPAC bid to challenge at least three of its members who are part of the so-called squad, a loose group of progressive representatives. According to the media reports in The Intercept's investigation, the only incumbents AIPAC has targeted so far in this election cycle are CBC members. So if you understand that correctly, incumbents are always golden, right? Democrats generally stick up for other Democratic incumbents. That is unless They are progressives. And it seems like AIPAC, which has swayed many elections in the past, and we'll talk about those, is gunning for three progressive seats that just so happen to be held by Black progressives and who are also part of the Congressional Black Caucus. Who are those people? They're seeking to challenge CBC members, Representative Ilhan Omar, Jamal Bowman of New York, because of their support for putting restrictions on US aid to Israel, Jewish Insider reported last month. Since taking office, progressive CBC members, including Omar Bowman Lee, that's Summer Lee, Corey Bush, and Ayanna Pressley, have criticized human rights abuses against Palestinians or voted against military aid to Israel. They were among the 10 House Democrats who voted against a July resolution to absolve Israel of being an apartheid state. So I just want to, this is just a random resolution that says, no, it is not an apartheid state. And they, of course, that's too much. You cannot, I would say the resolution was too much, but I want to get into it before I give you these stats with the senator. The AIPAC-backed members of the caucus, because they're CBC members, Congressional Black Caucus members who receive a lot of money, 31 lawmakers have received a previously unreported total of $3.6 million from AIPAC since just February of last year, according to the Federal Election Commission's records. Since 2022, the CBC's top AIPAC recipients include Representative Glenn Ivey, who has taken $756,000 from the group, House Democratic Caucus Leader Hakeem Jeffries, who's taken $485,300, Representative Valerie Fauci, who has taken $456,800, Representative Richie Torres of New York, who's taken $459,900, and Representative Chantel Brown of Ohio, who has taken almost $350,000. Senator Turner, Chantel Brown, you have heard of her. You went up against her two times in a row and got that same money poured into her campaign over your campaign. But just maybe just weigh in on this new reporting of exactly how much those figures are.
Close to home, Francesca, you got that right. And she went up against me that first time in a special election. Let me just put that
Yes.
out. And we were way ahead before this dark money started to pour in. A question must be asked, and you just laid out who's receiving that money. And so Hakeem Jeffries is the leader there, and he is steeped in that money. So nothing is going to happen. The Congressional Black Caucus as a whole is not going to stand up for its members that are being targeted because those members are progressives. Democrats will go really, really hard. They go harder after progressives than they do after Republicans. And just because these members are Black, that will not change, because organizations like AIPAC and others, what they will say is the same thing they said in my race, Francesca, is that, we supported another Black person, which does not absolve them of it. See, I want people to understand this, that just because they pick their Black person, meanwhile, back in these districts, the Black people who live in these districts don't get an opportunity in a clear way to pick the person that they want to serve them because they are pouring this money in. Mm-hmm. And don't forget, these are the same groups, though, who also backed the Republican candidates who said January 6th wasn't a thing. They denied the election. So I want people to understand this. And another finer point, it's not even so much about what the concerns of the districts are. I want y'all to understand this. This is the concerns for Israel and not the concerns. Y'all understand this? A concerns of a foreign entity is being placed over the concerns of these respective districts. And it is okay for them to go after Black elected officials or Black people who are running, i.e. myself, before they even become elected officials, and the Black caucus not say a mumbling word. These organizations jumping into Democratic primaries. And in my case, Francesca, as you remember, it was an open seat the first time in the special election. But because we were 30 points ahead in April of 2021, they jumped in with all their might. And so did Black caucus members too, because quote unquote, I'm not the right kind of Democrat, because I'm standing up for my people and I'm standing up for just justice and security for both Palestinians and Israelis. And the members who are standing up saying we can't be giving our money away without holding people accountable, that is a practice of the United States, Francesca. Those members are not saying anything differently than what should be and has been the practice of the United States of America.
Yes. And there's so much to talk about. This is a massive story and it's an ongoing story. But you're right that 37 GOP insurrectionists were supported by AIPAC money.
That's it.
They voted against certifying the 2020 election and they got that. They got support.
They got that money.
And look, the last thing I'm going to say here is it is a wedge to drive in the black community and black That's voters right. and among black politicians. And it is done very insidiously, specifically around this issue, as often black leaders are also accused of being anti-Semitic. So remember that this is all conflated. It is a way to accuse black Americans of being anti-Semitic if they do not fall in line with all of what Israel does against its own population, against the population of the Palestinians, and to say nothing of its own corruption that it's undergoing right now in the judicial system. So it is.
Francesca, I hope after the break we come back to this 1 minute because I see the break sign going up. This story needs a little more.
Let's
Even
do it.
Donna Edwards, who is no flaming progressive.
No.
They came at her. She had Nancy Pelosi, then Speaker Pelosi at the time, and some other very high profile Democrats backing her, and they still came at her with a vengeance. To do this kind of thing, especially to the black community, and to pick the black face that they want.
Yep.
Hello, somebody. Yeah, we need to have a long conversation about this, Francesca. If I had papers, I'd throw them right now. I used to do, as you remember.
Yes. All right. Well, we have to leave it there, but we'll continue on YouTube. If you're on Linear, thank you so much for stopping by. There is a lot more in the aftermath, so hold on to your butts.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.